I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we start off in Tasmania.
Yes, we do.
And we chat to an extremely interesting local character there.
Mm-hmm.
Goes by the name of Tony Newport.
Yes, and he wrote a book and he's actually got CDs.
He did indeed write a book. And the book is called Gravel and Mud, and it's all about his days, football days.
In Tasmania.
In Tasmania, playing on the both surfaces.
Yes.
Gravel and mud. Very interesting discussion. And yes, you're right, Lynn. He's also got a couple of CDs, and a song that he wrote before he wrote the book, Gravel and Mud, is the song we're going to be playing for him. Now, straight after that.
You're talking to Matt from HEMA Maps.
Yes, indeed. Now, I met Matt from HEMA Maps at the Monday
Bash,
Festival,
yes.
The Monday Bash last year. And as it's coming up close to the Burrsville Bash, Matt will probably be there. And I thought, well, put it on now.
Yep.
Talking about this sensational GPS that they've come up with. And then straight after that.
You're chatting to Ken Wilson from Truck Caravan Road and Safety Program.
Indeed. And about an extremely important subject, okay, listeners.
It's towing speeds.
Towing speeds, because the speeds vary from state to state. And,
yes, and the weight of your
the
van.
The weight of your van. So many people are so unaware of the difference in what they should and shouldn't be doing. Now, look, Lynn, apart from all these fabulous discussions, we've also got a great selection of music as requested by the people we interview. So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show!
G'day, listeners. Phil C here. This is Roaming Oz, and we are. Where are we, Tony? What's the name of this? This is Hillwood.
This is called Hillwood. It's an old orchard district in the Tama Valley.
I just had to ask Tony. We're with Tony Newport, listeners, and he is the author of Gravel and Mud, an anthology of football in the mountains of Western Tasmania. Now, the book was written by John Carswell, Tony Newport, and Chris Carswell. Now, tell us a little bit about the book. Why did you decide to write a book all about football, Tony?
Okay, so John Carswell is the main driver of this book.
Okay.
And John came to me, be 10 or 12 years ago, I reckon.
Uh-huh.
And I'd had a couple of stories printed in the local paper.
Right.
And he ran the idea past me and we talked about it. And over that long period, we published this in 2021.
Right.
We finally got a book together. And the history of football on the west coast of Tasmania echoes the mining history.
Right.
So, and I think that's its appeal. There were plenty of boom and bust towns. There were many, many teams. And a lot of people have come through the west coast. Some very famous people as well who went on to forge careers in the VFL and the Victorian Football League. So, yes, we thought that there was enough interest, at least, to do a book. But the fun part was actually doing it.
Writing
really
the book.
Well, we travelled around. Quite a number of people that we interviewed have now passed on. So, you know, they were at the right time to get them, I guess. And they'd bring out their scrapbooks. It was amazing. They'd have these scrapbooks that they've had in there for 50 or 60 years, and they'd bring them out, and they were immaculate. They'd open them up and have a chat to you, and it was a fabulous time. We really enjoyed it.
How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, I guess we had stories together, and I suppose about 2016, about 5 years out, we had to decide, you know, did we have enough? Do we need to do more? Have we really got a book? And I think that's when it really kicked into gear. And,
okay.
And a little bit like the conversation you and I have been having, because this is Tasmania,
right.
Phil. And so you go and talk to somebody and they say, you need to go and talk to that person and that person. So once we got our skates on, we finished up with some fascinating material.
Yeah.
And I should add here that Chris Carswell, the John's brother, he did a lot of the history. So going through all the old Trove records and those sorts of things and digging out, you know, some really interesting stories, like one of the stories back in the 1890s in Zion. They had a race down the main street for over hurdles for 110 guineas or something, which is an amazing amount of money today's currency.
Back in that time, that would have been a crown's fortune.
I'm just going to ask a question now. Can you, the title of the book is called Gravel and Mud. How did you come up with that?
Well, it's interesting. Gravel and Mud was a song that I composed and put on my first CD that Vince Brophy produced. And when we were actually looking for a name for a book, that was the obvious title, mm-hmm. because the two major towns on the West Coast who, at the peak of both the football and the mining boom, which happened to be, I guess, roughly post-war to the mid-70s, maybe early 80s, Rosebery and Queenstown were fierce rivals, and they were the big employers, and Rosebery had a turf oval, which in a rainforest was mud, which it was.
Yes.
And Queenstown had the gravel oval.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, both sides had to adapt. Rosebery had two terms, Queenstown had four. And the Rosebery sides had to adapt to the gravel and the gravel teams had to adapt to the mud.
So what would have been more difficult, do you think, to adapt to? Playing on gravel? Because you imagine falling over in gravel, my goodness. Or slipping and sliding around in the mud.
I think the mud was harder.
The mud was harder?
I really do.
Yeah?
I didn't mind the Queenie ground. I mean, once you got over the fact that that's where you were playing and you played there often enough, it wasn't a factor.
Yeah, but falling down, getting tackled by some big front rower and driving your jaw into the gravel, that would have been tough football, not like today, surely.
Well, you know, kids played on there. They even had a women's team that played on there.
Yeah.
Look, don't get me wrong. It was pretty tough footy. There's no question about that.
Yes.
But it was played in good spirit.
Okay.
And yes, you had permanently scarred knees, but you know, you just got on with it.
You just got on with it.
Yes.
And you'd do it today if you probably could, because you're a little bit older now. I mean, you're still looking very fit, but you couldn't see yourself going out there and playing 80 minutes on gravel.
No, thank you. and in fact, the gravel used to be screenings from the mine, and so it was a little bit coarse.
Okay.
And these days, it's much finer, so I don't think it's as harsh a surface as it used to be.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But I finished up with two poison legs. I had a poison leg from Rosebery and one from Queenstown, and they're quite painful.
A
poison leg.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got injured and became infected.
And that was quite common.
Okay.
They used to have a tincture called Mercurochrome that they'd just paint over their nose.
I remember that.
And often it would paint the stuff in.
Yeah.
So I had two, and the second one I was on crutches for a couple of weeks, and it was very painful.
Yes.
And I vowed and declared that was it. I was never going to have another poison leg.
Okay.
So the trainers would come out, and they'd see my knees were bleeding, and I'd just say, leave them alone and let them touch them.
Yes.
And after the game, I'd come in and I had a little brush with bristles, and you go in the shower, and you grit your teeth.
And you
scrub your knees till they bled.
Scrub your knees to get all that stuff out of them.
Yeah, that was the easy part.
Wow.
Because then you come out and we had this trainer called George Rubens. And George, I'm sure, was the saddest. Because he'd be sitting there with his mate Tubby with a bottle of methylated spirits and some cotton wool. And they'd put the metho on the cotton wool.
On the cotton wool.
Then he'd dab it on your knee. And he'd get down and he'd look up at you.
Smiling.
You think of his eyes were just gleaming. That's what you did. And so you had 30 seconds of absolute agony and that was it. And you were good.
So what did you get out of football? Because that sounds awfully uncomfortable. And was it the mateship or what? What was it for you?
Oh, yes. Football was mateship. Was a big part of being a young bloke.
Yes.
There wasn't much else either, by the way. But,
okay.
It was generational. So you join a football club as a 15-year-old, which I did, and you had men there who were your parents' generation, and they took an interest in you, and, you know, it was a kind of connection that well, almost like a rite of passage, I guess.
Okay.
And then you got older and into the team and those sorts of things, yes.
Now, you said your music, you said you wrote a song called Gravel and Mud, yes. And the book's called Gravel and Mud. So yeah. Your music was before the book, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. Tell us about your music, because I did read somewhere that people said you couldn't sing.
Yes.
Like back in your school days, in the choir and so on and so forth, that you're no good. You can't sing, forget it.
Well,
so.
It's true.
Yep.
I mean, I think the choir master was, you know, there wasn't a lot of care taken.
Okay.
He just went along in the front row with his ear, and if he didn't like you, he just went like, just give you the thumb.
Okay.
I think we could all sing. Tone deaf is actually a real physical impairment,
right.
Of which very few people have.
Okay.
And the rest of us can sing to some degree.
Right.
And in fact, our parents' generation did sing.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm talking about people that were brought up in the, you know, born in the 30s, and they'd get around a piano and sing, and nobody would care less.
Yes.
But these days, with the reproduction of music and everything else, it's pretty fierce judges out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I had my own hearing problem. I used to muck around with a guitar and could belt out a tune. And in the bedroom, thought I was pretty good, but
right.
You know, but I wasn't really. But when I bought my first harp, it had a pickup in it.
Right.
And so I had to go and buy an amp.
Okay.
So a couple of things happened, because an auto harp has 37 strings and it covers right. 4 octaves.
Okay.
Right. And whilst it's tedious to tune once it's in tune. It sounds magnificent, and of course you've got electronic tuners these days, so you're playing something that's seriously in tune and you're getting amplified
sound
feedback and your voice adjusts. So I became a better singer by playing this instrument with a pickup, and of course the added thing was once I started to be a bit serious, I did record some of my songs and listen back and become a pretty fierce critic, you know.
Of your playing or yes. Your singing?
Well, both.
On both, yeah.
But mainly my singing.
Yes.
Yes. So, and I'm working with Vince has helped my singing a lot. Yeah. And the more you do it, the better you get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting to note, though, because I did speak with Vince, and Vince did say to me that he had no formal training.
Yes.
His dad used to sing, and yes. He sort of learned from his dad. And the same with his guitar playing.
Yes.
He didn't do that until he was 26. What age were you when you picked up the harp?
I was, when I first saw Billy Connolly, I would have been in my 40s, I reckon, maybe late 40s. My wife bought one. I couldn't play it. I mean, I mucked around with it and dabbled and went into disrepair. And it would have been about 14 years ago, so it would be mid-50s.
Wow.
My first public performance was 2 weeks before my 60th birthday.
Okay. That's incredible.
Well, you know.
Because most people at that age, they're a master of their craft, whether it yeah. be a guitar or a harp mm. or whatever. But to pick up an instrument, did you find it hard to learn at 40? Or was it pretty? You said you dabbled in a guitar, so could you play guitar before? Or?
Well, the auto harp is a relatively easy instrument to learn.
Right.
Right. And you can get kids playing tunes fairly quickly. So that's the first thing. I guess the second thing is what you play and how far you push it. And when you really like something, you tend to do it a lot.
Yeah.
So we were in this little room in my shed.
Yep.
Because I used to sit upstairs in the top room and drive my wife crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're now out here. You've got your own little music studio
yes.
out here out the back.
Yes.
And this is where you come to write your music?
Yes.
Are you still writing? So you've got 2 CDs at the moment. So
yes.
Still writing
more? Yes. Well, I've written a song for this particular harp, the Bradshaw harp, which, has come my way by the generous donation of some really fine Tasmanian timber. And I want to repay them. So
yes.
that's the last song that I've written. But, yes, I still muck around with the odd song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this harp that you've used, it's a very unique harp, you said.
It's unique in the sense that there are plenty of auto harps around and plenty of luthiers, and I dare say there's quite a few made of Australian timbers. But I seriously doubt that there is one made of Tasmanian timber, for all Tasmanian timber.
Okay. Mm. So do you think by being made of all Tasmanian timber, it's not only unique in its timber, but obviously in its sound?
Oh, it's got beautiful sound.
So you couldn't get another auto harp to sound like this one?
I doubt it.
Because of the timbers that were selected to make it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and it has how many strings?
37.
37 strings.
Yes.
I have trouble strumming six. How do you get your hand around 37 strings?
Well, you do. You know, it's not that hard. You strap it to your chest. You get a nice sweep going across. And, yeah, off you go.
Fabulous. Mm. And you play with Vince Broby.
Yep.
Brophy. Yep. Yeah. Part of his band, or do you just play together when you're at the? Yes, I saw the photograph on your studio wall. Now that's a photo of the band, and that's got Vince in it.
Yep.
And yourself. What's the name of the band?
Oh, look, what do we call ourselves now? Something Twins. I can't remember now.
Yes. and the young lady. Who's the young lady?
Oh, right in there. That's Cora.
Cora, okay.
That's Cora Brown. She's a fabulous singer. She does a lot of singing in Melbourne.
Yes.
Yes. And Felix Maher on the right on the far left there. Mm-hmm. He's a fine fiddle player. He actually played fiddle on the music to Australia the Movie.
Right. Mm.
Some fine musicians and people there in that bottom photograph, yes.
Fabulous.
Mrs. Murphy's identical twins we are. That's what we call ourselves.
Mrs. Murphy. Oh, goodness me. Have you got anything you'd like to ask?
No.
Tony, Lynn, no?
No.
Nothing at all? Anything you might like to add, Tony? Anything, any, because you're also a storyteller, they tell me.
Is that
right or wrong?
Yes, well, most of the songs come from stories, so.
Yes.
I'm a great fan of Eric Bogan. I like his style. Eric likes to tell a little bit of a story before he sings a song.
Okay. So one of your influences or?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris Christopherson. I love Chris Christopherson. Yep. Do you like him?
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Is he still around, is he?
Yes, he is. He's quite old. He's quite old now, yes. But
he's still going.
Some wonderful songs, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I guess I like songs that tell a story and you can hear the words.
So do I.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely fantastic. Well, I can't wait to hear your music because I've not heard any of your music and I've never seen an auto harp?
Yes.
That close, and I've never actually heard one.
We'll play a few songs before you go.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Love to. Well, we're going to have to wind this up now.
Okie doke.
Tony. Mm. And I always play a song at the end of it.
Right.
Now, what can we play for you?
Well, you can probably play Gravel and Mud if you like.
Gravel and Mud sounds very appropriate. Now, you wrote this before the book. We've got the book. How can people get hold of your book or your music if they're
There's
interested?
A website called Gravel and Mud.
Right.
Yep. And
of course.
Yes. And I have a website called, you know, just Tony Newport.
Tony Newport or Gravel and Mud.
Yes.
And that will take him to the book and also to your music.
Yep.
Tony, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thanks, Phil.
It's been an absolute pleasure for us. And can't wait to hear the rest of your music. Stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after Tony Newport's Gravel and Mud.
Difference in mollick and dirt, there's luck and sorrow in a miner's worth. There are fields of play beneath lyle and reed, there's grit and grace in the West Coast creed, there's blood and stitches in the game they love. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud, gravel and mud, stitches and blood. West Coast spirit in the game they love. How many words do paint the sky? How much is contained in a miner's sigh? There's a world of difference in drizzle and rain. There's winter and darkness in a miner's veins. There are fields of play beneath lyle and reed. There's grit and grace in the West Coast creed. There's blood and stitches in the game they love. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud. Gravel and mud, stitches and blood. West Coast spirit in the game they love. There's a world of difference in graft and gain. There's regret and riches in a miner's pain. There are fields of play beneath lyre and reed. There's grit and grace in the West Coast creed. There's blood and stitches in the game they love. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud. Gravel and mud, stitches and blood. West Coast spirit in the game they love. How many words to paint the here and now? How much patience in a mining town? There's a world of difference in boom and bust. There's hope and fear, silver and rust. There are fields of play beneath lyre and reed. There's grit and grace in the West Coast creed. There's blood and stitches in the game they love. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud.
Hi, g'day listeners. This is Phil C. And this is Roman Oz is the program. I'm at Mundi, the big Mundi bash. And I am chatting with Matt from Hema Maps. Matt, how are you going today?
I'm very, very well. I'm excited to be here. This is fun.
Fantastic, mate. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us. Now, tell us a little bit about the business, first of all, Matt. How long has the business been running?
The business has been running for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
And it was a couple called Henry and Margaret Boheim.
Okay.
So you think about it, Henry, H-E, Margaret, M-A, that's where Hema came from.
Fantastic. So. Yeah, I was going to ask you that, Heeman. You've
there
already
we go,
answered, mate.
I'm ahead of the game, aren't I?
You must be reading my mind. Now, tell us all about Hema Maps, because you guys really are the four-wheel drive specialists when it comes to maps, aren't you?
Look, it started, like I said, almost 40 years ago. Henry literally was laminating maps in his back shed, supposedly.
Okay.
He realised there was a gap in the market for off-road mapping.
Yep.
As we know, it's a pretty big country out here.
It's a huge country.
And if you know where you're going and you don't want to get lost, so they started basically producing off-road maps.
Wow. So what was their interest, do you think? Do you think it was just because they wanted to explore the country and actually map it for others to follow in their footprint?
Both. I think they love travelling.
Yep.
They love exploring.
Okay.
Our motto is prepare to explore.
Yes.
So they created that. So obviously the more information you've got on these remote parts of the country, the better equipped you're going to be.
Okay. Okay. Yep. So with your clientele, because I'm standing here for the benefit of our listeners, I'm standing here at the store or at your tent, and you've got some electronic gear, but you've also got a lot of paper maps and books, like directories.
Yeah.
Now, what's the most popular with your customers?
Honestly,
would it be the electronics or the paper stuff?
50-50.
Okay.
And the good thing about the GPS, which is satellite-driven, it always works.
Yep.
And it's always good to know where you are on that map.
Okay.
But on the flip side of the coin, when you've got a big open map in front of you, you can all sit around it, around the campfire, in the bonnet of a car. You can say, right, we're going to go there, we're going to go there, we're going to go there.
Yeah.
And once you've done that, then you put that in your GPS unit and you know where you are on the map.
I think they
work together.
I think that the beauty of being able to look at a map though, Matt, is that's all part of planning the trip, isn't
exactly
it?
Right.
You sit around the campfire, you sit around the barbecue, you have a beer and you look at the map and it's like, it's part of an adventure, isn't it?
Exactly.
Plotting
so people say there's no use for maps these days,
yes.
But if you're going exploring, you need a map.
You really need
a
map.
You need a map. And the whole Google GPS, yeah, that's great in the city, but that just simply doesn't work out in the outback.
No. Yeah. But your electronic stuff does, like the HEMAP HX2, for example, which we're looking at here. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, it's all satellite-driven, so when your mobile phone won't work,
yes,
it does work.
Okay.
It has you know, it's a big country. We haven't got all the roads and maps in there, but we basically have most of it.
Yep.
It also has all the campsites. It has rest stops. It has petrol stations. It has over 100,000 points of interest.
Wow.
And it's all nationwide, so it's pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome piece of gear. And I guess the best thing is you don't need, like you said, I mean, I've got a GPS. I don't have one of these. And how many times does the blessed thing not work?
Yeah.
Or it wants to reroute you 20, 30 times and get you lost anyway.
Exactly. So on the way to the Big Red Bash a month ago, we were in Aminka. Guy rocked up and goes, "You must be able to help me. How do I get to Burnsville? Google Maps, it doesn't work." That's understandable, mate.
Okay.
I gave him a map, explained him where to go, and he was very, very grateful.
So in relation to your maps, because obviously people are discovering new roads and new tracks and things all the time.
Yes.
Like, how do you go about that? Have you got a team of people that...
We have a map patrol, and their job is to physically go out to these remote areas, and they capture all the data and then send that back to the office in Brisbane there, and they've got the carto team that sit there and put it all together.
Fantastic.
And create the maps, and the maps then go into the GPS unit.
How do I get a job on the map patrol?
A lot of people wanting it, mate, trust me. A lot of people wanting it.
Mate, sounding absolutely awesome. I might just stop it here for a moment because there are a few more questions, but you got customers. Okay, Matt, so you've just had a few customers come in, which is great, and specifically asking questions about the HEMA HX2. Now, this is the latest and greatest, isn't it?
The latest and greatest was released August last year, so exactly a year ago. We've had a pretty amazing response. We have changed the mapping from what's called raster mapping to vector mapping.
Okay.
So when you zoom in, it just stays on that same page. It zooms in a lot more quicker and less menu memory, and the detail is pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome. Yep. So what sort of features? Let's just, for the benefit of the listeners, what can they do with this actual GPS?
Yeah, okay. Well, looking at the main screen there, it's got on-road. So that's basically city to city, suburb to suburb, voice navigation, turn by turn, speed cameras, red light cameras, all the above.
Okay,
the off-road, so that's where really most people will buy it for.
Yeah.
It has all the caravan parks, petrol stations, four-wheel drive tracks. A lot of them are graded as well, from easy, moderate to difficult, and that is nationwide as well.
Okay.
And once again, it'll navigate where you need to go.
Okay.
And then the adventure maps, so all those maps we were talking about, which are all foldable, the paper ones, they've actually sucked them into the system in a digital version.
Right.
And you can then see a paper map in your HX2.
Which is pretty awesome, because when you consider the price of some of these books, some of these four-wheel drive adventure, top 100 tracks and road and four-wheel drive track atlas, you're looking $50-$60 a book.
Oh, yeah.
So by the time you compile all those books, this makes this GPS pretty cheap.
It's a lot
cheap.
Thinner than all those books as well, mate. You can put it in your pockets.
A lot less to lug.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, it's probably fantastic value when you look at it like that, wouldn't you?
The good thing is, as we discussed, the map patrol, they're always out and about doing things.
Yeah.
These upgrade or update every 3 months.
Okay,
so as I said to that customer before, the last update, they did basically the contour lines on the east coast. There was a 50-metre. Now there's a 10-metre gap, so so much detail.
So how do they go about updating them? Do they have to plug them into a computer, or how does that actually work?
That's very old school. It's like a mobile phone these days. So when you're at home, you're connected to Wi-Fi, you hit updates, and it all just happens. It just happens. It's magic.
Unbelievable. And when you were saying the off-road stuff, you're talking about caravan parks. You mentioned earlier that it'll tell you where the caravan park is. It'll also give you ratings.
It's interactive, so customers can actually rate the caravan. They can take a photo if they like. It'll have general costs of each caravan park. It'll also have the free camping as well.
Yep.
So if you're on a budget, which, let's face it, the price of diesel these days, if you can save a dollar, you definitely can with these units.
Fantastic. So that's the HEMA HX2.
Correct.
So there you go, listeners. If you're interested in the latest and greatest in maps, and, a lot of these nomads, they want to carry the books, but at the end of the day, You know, their eyes may not be the best because these guys talk to you too, I'm assuming. It'll give you directions.
It does on-road.
On-road,
yes. Off-road, just for legal reasons, if we do say turn left and that track has moved due to weather, due to flooding, and you turn left...
You could end up over
exactly the right. So we don't want legal.
We don't want any of that. No, but for normal, general on-road stuff, it'll direct you.
Yeah,
really
it's very good too. Fantastic. Very good. Very good.
Mate, thank you so much for taking the time,
thank
Matt.
You. It's been
a pleasure chatting with you, and having a look at some of your latest products. Now we're at the Monday Bash.
By the way, the stand is getting bigger. The team from Melbourne, they should be here any minute. This 3-metre gazebo will turn into a 9-metre gazebo.
Does that mean you're going to have? Like stacks more stock. Okay, I might have to come back when you got. What sort of stock are you likely to be having out here?
We'll have more of the guides. Yes. We'll have more of the maps. Yep. There'll be just a bit more room to move. As you can see, it's a bit pokey at the moment.
Yeah, it's a little bit confined. But look, this is pre-festival, isn't it?
Exactly right.
I mean, there's a few punters here, but...
What day is it today? It's Tuesday. It technically starts on Thursday.
We're just
warming up, so it's all good.
Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. So, mate, what can I finish this with? I've got to play you an Aussie song. Now, what's your favourite Aussie band?
Well, I guess because Midnight Oil is headlining it, I'd be crazy not to do a Midnight Oil song. What's that song? Blue Sky Mining, definitely.
Blue Sky Mining.
I think that's a bit iconic at the moment.
It is indeed. We are at Monday, which is just a stone throw from Broken Hill, so I think you've hit that right on the head.
Beautiful.
The nail on the head.
All right,
listen, stick around for Blue Sky Mine by Midnight Oil. And we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after that.
All good. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Matt. Matt from HEMA Maps.
7th Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz and I've got Mr. Ken Wilson from Truck Friendly Caravan Road Safety Program on the program. How are you going today, Ken?
I'm terrific, Phil. Always wonderful here in Queensland.
Good on you, mate. It's a great state. One day it's perfect, the next day it's even better.
That's
what they tell me. I've got to get up there sometime. We are back in New South Wales and making our way to southwestern Queensland. We're not going to get up as far as you, but we're on the way to Queensland, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, mate, so many southerners come up here for our what they call winter.
But, yes.
It's just another day up here.
Yes, it is, yeah. It is. Queensland one day and perfect the next. I can't remember what the little saying went. Anyway, mate, what are we going to discuss today? I think something, and this because this is what happened to me today, right? Driving here to where we are, I had a vehicle overtake me doing ridiculous speed, I reckon, and he got to where we were both going. And as I pulled into the town, he's sitting on the bowser getting fuel, and I pulled in behind him. Now, I don't know what speed he was doing, but I think speed is something we need to discuss. So what do you reckon about towing speeds for today?
Phil, there's a lot of confusion around some of the towing speeds.
Right.
I've been told that Western Australia is 90 kilometres an hour, and all the other states have got unlimited speeds and so on and so forth.
Right.
The facts are that in Western Australia, you're limited to 100 kilometres an hour for any vehicle that is towing a trailer.
Okay. And it doesn't matter the size or the weight of the trailer?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't. You can tow your box trailer and you restrict to 100 kilometres an hour. There's big signs on the side of the road up there advertising that as well.
Okay.
And also another thing with Western Australia that it is common throughout all the states is that vehicles towing a caravan and trailer must drive at least 60 metres behind heavy vehicles or other towing vehicles unless overtaking.
Right.
So if you're towing a caravan, you need to be 60 metres behind the one in front. So,
okay.
Keep that in mind when you're looking at speeds. Now, most of the states have the law that you can tow at the posted speed limit so long as it is safe.
Right.
Tasmania has one where if you're towing a trailer on a gravel road, you are limited to 80 kilometres an hour.
Okay.
In Tasmania.
Right.
Now, New South Wales has a little bit different. The laws in New South Wales for towing a trailer, if your vehicle GVM, that's the plated weight of the tow vehicle.
Right.
And or the vehicle and trailer combination with a GCM over 4.5 tonnes. So that's the caravan. If your caravan and tow vehicle are plated at more than 4.5 tonnes, then you are restricted to 100 kilometres an hour.
Right.
Or the posted speed limit, whichever is the
greater. The lower, yep.
The lower, sorry, yes.
Yes.
There's a bit of confusion about that. Originally, on one of the New South Wales government websites, it actually just said if your GVM is over 4.5 tonne, you're restricted.
Yes.
But that actually conflicted with the New South Wales legislation. So in 2022, I contacted the New South Wales Roads and Maritime several times asking them to change it. And they said, no, it's all correct, blah, blah, blah. So I got on to the New South Wales Minister, and he arranged for it to be changed. So now the website is correct,
right?
With New South Wales legislation. So yes, in New South Wales, if your GVM or GCM, if you were towing, is over 4.5 ton, you are restricted to a maximum of 100 kilometres an hour.
Right.
Now, 4.5 ton, as you know, includes probably 90% of the caravan rigs on the road.
Yes.
When you've got your tow vehicle and your caravan.
Absolutely.
Most of those. There's a few smaller ones that don't. I saw a mini towing a very small little trailer the other day, and it's probably not going to be over 4.5 tonne.
But
majority would be. So these the people you hear going down the Hume Highway and that, and they're being overtaken by these cars and caravans, well, you know, there's a pretty good chance that they're breaking the speed limit.
For sure. Because as
those
you said,
laws are there for a reason.
Yes.
You know, if you're towing, the faster you go, the more chance there is of caravan sway, and the greater the severity of caravan sway, and the less reaction time you have.
Yes.
So they're there for a reason. You know, people say, oh, yeah, I can safely tow at that speed. Well, legally you probably can't, and the laws are there for a very good reason.
Yeah. Well, when you think of 4.5 tonne, it sounds like a big number, but when you're talking about the combination, I mean, most caravans that people are towing, you know, with family vans or off-road vans, you know, they're all in that road weight range. All of them.
Your normal dual cab ute's probably around about a GVM of about 3,200.
Yeah.
And then he's got a, you know, 2.5 ton van on the back.
Well, of course.
You know, they're way over.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. But yeah, look, the amount of people that drive at 100, there are a lot of people who are very sensible, you know, driving at the 80, 85, 90 kilometres. But there's as many that aren't. I mean, this fellow that overtook me today would have been doing well in excess of that. And for what? He got into town a couple of minutes before me. He was still filling fuel when I pulled into town. I pulled in behind him at the Bowser. I thought, what was that all about? And there was a vehicle coming the other way at the same time.
Yeah, the internet's full of videos, so dash cam videos of cars towing caravans overtaking a truck.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get caravan sway and roll over.
Yes.
You know, I sort of stop and wonder, well, most of the trucks are doing the, you know, close to the speed limit as they can.
Yes.
I'm more than happy to sort of sit at a nice safe distance behind them.
Absolutely.
Now, in an area, just on the following bit, as I say, there had to be 60 kilometres, you're supposed to be 60 metres behind. In an area used by road trains, that's usually 200 metres.
Right.
Now, 60 metres, if you've got a rig with a 6-metre vehicle and a 6-metre car, a 6-metre caravan, that's only 12 metres. So you can imagine you've got to fit, you know, 3 or 4 caravan rigs between you and the vehicle that you're following.
In front, and that's rare too. That's rare.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the truck drivers get, you know, cop the bad press because they do follow, and it is annoying that the NHVR and others say all these big advertising campaigns to say that you know, give the truck space in the front. Well, some of the cowboy truck drivers don't give themselves space, so they give themselves a bit of a bad name. But the majority of the truck drivers are you know, family men and women who are just trying to do a job and earn a quid, you know, and they're fairly decent people.
So what do you think the problem is with the people that are exceeding the speed limit? Do you think it's because they genuinely believe if the speed sign says 110, they're legally allowed to travel at 110? Or is it that they just don't realise that they shouldn't be travelling at 110 purely and simply because of their weight?
Oh, look, a lot of them, it's probably lack of education.
Right.
Lack of knowledge of it, and that's why, you know, the Truck Friendly program sort of tries to publish this information.
Mm-hmm.
I did and you got the posted speed limit there, and sometimes people just want to keep up with the other traffic.
Right.
I did some research a few years ago now when we actually had paper newspapers, and the Sunshine Case Daily newspaper. I did some searching over that, and over a 4-year period, there were 20 caravan rollovers in the Sunshine Coast area of Queensland alone.
Wow.
Now, that's mainly the majority of those, if not all. I think there was one that wasn't, but majority were on the Bruce Highway, and they were just north of Brisbane there in the Sunshine Coast, 110 zone, dual carriageway, uphill, downhill. What happens is that the cars and caravans are doing 110 kilometres an hour in that area there. They go down a hill.
Yes.
The caravan starts to try and overtake the car, and yet the caravan sway, etc. So there was, you know, five a year in that area alone that were recorded in that newspaper.
Wow.
Now there's got to be a lot of caravan sways and other near accidents that weren't recorded.
Right.
In there. Now another thing to keep in mind too is you've got the state and federal government legislation saying on different speeds, but you've also got the car manufacturers as well.
Right.
Now a lot of vehicles have restrictions placed by the manufacturer. Now I've got, for example, a 2021 Ford Ranger.
Right.
According to the manual in that, I'm restricted to 100 kilometres an hour when towing.
Right.
Now a lot of vehicles have similar manufacturers' specifications for towing limit. I think Subaru is some of them are 80 kilometres an hour. There's also all different vehicles and different models. It's not just one particular brand of car or one particular make of car. It's the different models. It can vary from year to year as well.
Okay.
Some of them, like some of the Fords, have a sliding scale. Depending on the weights, you're restricted to different towing speeds as well. So, you know, I think one of the things that people don't do is we don't read the instructions.
In the manual, you mean? In the owner's manual of the vehicle?
Yeah, in the owner's manual. Oh. You know, we all got these things. It's only once you assemble the Christmas toy that you begin to understand the instructions, you know.
Okay.
But if people got out there and actually read their manual, they would find a lot of information on them, especially some of these vehicles that are high-tech now. You know, there's different ways to do things.
But the thing is, I mean, that's the recommendations of the manufacturer. We recommend you don't tow, you know, over 100 kilometres. But as you say, most people wouldn't read the manual unless they didn't know how to tune their radio or set the clock or something. I don't think they'd be looking at
that. That's exactly right.
You know, but as far as the road rules are concerned, I mean, that's something that they need to know, because if the road rule states that the maximum you are allowed to travel if your GCM is 4.5 ton is 100 kilometres an hour, then that's something they need to know, because it's not only from a safety point of view, but from the fact that, you know, if they get themselves booked, you know, they're going to lose demerit points, they're going to get fined, and also put themselves in danger because they've set the speed limit to 45 to 100 kilometres for 4.5 ton for a reason. And the reason is that, you know, it takes a lot of road space to pull 4.5 ton up. You don't just pull them up like a car. So
that's right.
You know?
Yeah, and I think the state governments have got to take a bit of responsibility with this as well.
Right.
In the lack of education, in that there's just so many different road rules for different states.
Yeah.
Now, we're one country, for heaven's sake.
I know.
So, you know, are we expected to pull up at the state border and read the road legislation for that individual state before we cross the border?
Yeah.
No, it's completely impractical.
Yeah.
So if we had more common road rules throughout Australia, life would be, you know, so much better and easier. And the education might get out there, because straight away it would be part of a road rule that you did when you're getting your car license.
Yeah.
That you read, and it's applicable throughout Australia and not just in that particular state.
Yes. I think the biggest thing, though, is really should be just the individual exercising common sense. I mean, my vehicle is heavy. My trailer weighs 4.5 ton. I travel in a truck with a fifth wheeler. The trailer weighs 4.5 ton. So I'm restricted to 100. I never even attempt to get to 100 because I don't see the point. You're on holidays or you're retired, you're traveling. Why do you need to travel at 100? Why do you need to travel at 110? It's not an emergency situation. Just because the road sign says 110 and you might in your mind believe, well, I can travel at 110, the sign's telling me so. But when you've got 2.5 to 3 tonne of caravan sitting behind you, you've got to think about that.
That's right. A lot of them sort of travel so that, because they say, oh, you got to keep up with the traffic so you don't hold up other drivers. And that, and there's credibility in that.
Yes.
But by the same token, you've got to use common sense, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, I tend to, when I'm out by myself, I'll probably do around about the 90 to 95, something like that.
Yes.
If I'm on the Bruce Highway and it's single lane and there's a swag of traffic on the road, I might push it up closer to the 100 just to try and keep the traffic flowing and not be banked up behind me.
Yep.
You know, I'm always sort of very conscious of the speeds. And when it's the 110 zone, well, quite often they're in a double lane anyway, so I can keep in the left lane and let the traffic have a traffic go past.
Yes.
But if you do find there's traffic building up behind you because you want to do the 85 or 90 because, you know, you save fuel or you just feel safer doing that speed,
yep.
by all means do it.
Yes.
But have a bit of courtesy for other road users.
Yes.
And pull over from time to time to let them pass or encourage them to pass. Yeah,
course,
and if you get to an overtaking lane, get in the left-hand lane there, slow down a bit so the other cars can get on their way and don't be in a hurry to sort of get back in the other lane.
No, exactly.
I much prefer to drive with nobody behind me, you know, waiting and waiting and waiting to see if they're going to pass.
Of course.
It's far more stressful. I like to enjoy my driving and I just take it nice and steady and, let the other people go around me if they want to, you know.
Exactly. So if they wanted to, have you got a specific place on your Facebook page where if somebody wanted to look up, I imagine because I found this on there, but just for the benefit of the listeners, towing speeds or something, how could they specifically go to your Facebook page or website and look up?
If they go onto our Facebook page and just go back a couple of I'm just trying to sort of look it up now, but if you just go back a couple of days, a couple of posts, you will find it there.
Fantastic. There. Fabulous.
There's a picture of New South Wales. Welcome to New South Wales on it. Mm-hmm. Nice and easy to see.
Fabulous.
But yeah, it's quite interesting to a lot that there's these different towing speeds. And a lot of people don't realise that the one in New South Wales, which can be a little bit confusing.
Yes. It's a very confusing, the whole, well, as you said, we're one country, but every time you cross the line and enter into another state, it seems like you're in another world because the road rules do change from state to state, the speed limits, the whole thing can be very confusing. And I think the best thing to do is just exercise common sense and travel the way you feel comfortable. And if you've got a swag of traffic behind you, move over, pull in somewhere, let them go, and then go again. But at no stage, I think you should be trying to travel at 110 kilometres with any decent sort of trailer behind you.
No, you get people and they boast, oh, yeah, I can do that. Well, yeah, mate, you know, but you probably haven't had the perfect storm yet.
No.
You know, where you've got a bit of speed and a slight bit of imbalance in your van and a truck goes past or some undulation in the road or something, just enough to set up that caravan sway. And
yep.
Once the caravan sway starts, you've got 5 seconds to realise what is happening, work out what you should do to try and correct it.
Mm-hmm.
And to actually do it and for it to take effect. Now, 5 seconds is not very long when you're driving along. Oh, geez, what was that? What am I supposed to do here?
Mm.
And then if you've got your, you should be activating your caravan brakes independently, electric brakes independently. And now if your controller is in some weird place on your dash that you can't see, you take a few seconds to even find it at times. So that's another tip, is to have that, you know, on the console beside you so that you can see it very easily, and because you're constantly constantly changing it. If you're driving properly, you constantly adjust your brakes on your caravan to the road conditions and the speed. You have it set lighter around town so you don't get brake lock up, but you need it set a bit heavier on the highway to be able to pull you up when you need to.
Yep. All right, Ken, well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you again today, and thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about speed, the different speed limits in the different states, and how to handle a situation, for example getting onto your trailer brake switch and using that rather than just immediately reacting and jumping on the brake pedal.
My pleasure, Phil. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Thanks, matey. What are we going to play for you now? You know the rules. You've got to give me an Aussie song after every discussion. What's your song selection for today, Ken?
Mate, I like having a bit of a sing-along when I'm out on the road, etc., much of my wife's discussed, but I haven't got the best singing voice. But
okay.
What about a bit of Australian groups, the Seekers? The Carnival is over.
The Seekers and the Carnival is over. Mate, it's a great song, a great song selection. And I would like to say, listeners, that if you do get your speed limits wrong and you are on holidays, the Carnival could be over. You could end up in the ditch. So good song selection for the topic of towing speeds today. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thanks, Phil. Stay safe.
All right, listeners, we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after the Seekers. The Carnival is over.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.